Welcome back to Living Lab Radio. I'm Heather Goldstone. For the final chapter of our year in review, we turn to the biomedical sciences. Here, there are two clear top stories of the year. One is the rapidly advancing field of gene editing, where a technology known as CRISPR is making the possibility of genetically modified humans seem very realistic. And the second is our growing understanding of how concussions and head trauma can lead to lifelong mental impairments. Joining me now to talk through these stories is Art Kaplan. He's the Dr. William F. and Virginia Connolly Mitty Professor of Bioethics at New York University's Langone Medical Center. He's also the founding director of New York University's Division of Biomedical Ethics. Art, welcome back to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me back.
All right, let's start with CRISPR. A lot of different individual advances this year. Perhaps the most exciting or shocking came in August this year. A group in Oregon announced that they had modified viable human embryos and fixed a mutation that causes a deadly heart disease with a very high rate of accuracy and effectiveness. But then within weeks, there were other researchers kind of calling these claims into question. At the end of the day, where do we stand in terms of our demonstrated ability to genetically modify human embryos safely and effectively?
Well, we're not there yet. And the Oregon work came under a lot of criticism. You know, CRISPR basically, you might think of it as having a biological scissors, snipping out something that's an error, like a typo on a in a sentence, and then putting the right letter back in. That's pretty much the CRISPR technology. But in the Oregon experiment, while it looked like something went back in, they couldn't tell whether it was DNA that was already there that went back in from another spot, or something that they had inserted, even though they made all kinds of claims. One thing we know for sure about CRISPR is that it's new, and we haven't done enough research yet in animals to make sure that we really know what we're putting where, and that matters because if you put a DNA letter in the wrong spot, you could cause all kinds of havoc to the embryo. By the way, you'll remember that we got all excited about cloning. Remember all the Dolly, the cloning?
Absolutely.
Fretting? Well, it turned out that's hard to do, too. We haven't seen any human clones.
Which I fret about all the time. I could use a human clone, and that hasn't come along yet.
Show up for work and somebody to blame. Yeah. Well, we don't have any, and it's because it turned out cloning is very hard to do and make work accurately. Many of the animals that we try it in either are not clonable or turn out to be stillborn. So it looked very exciting when we first found it, and that reminds me of CRISPR. It's not that it's not going to work, but it's very early days. CRISPR is also of interest for investment. There are a lot of startup companies, and the reason I mention this is this was the year of hype about CRISPR, and a lot of the companies that are promoting genetic engineering, looking for investors, are doing some pretty heavy breathing about, you know, human embryo engineering being right around the corner. I would take that with a grain of salt. I think that's more hanging out the shingle and hoping that venture capital comes to visit more than science and where the science is.
Well, when we think about where the science is, I mean, there are researchers who are carefully moving along and trying to improve the actual CRISPR technology,
right,
adapt it to do different things, make sure that it's, you know, more effective, more accurate, all of these things. And then there are researchers who seem to have kind of leapfrogged, and they are modifying human embryos. And it's not just this one group. I mean, there were multiple announcements this year.
Yeah, announcements from China, among other places.
Exactly. Is the CRISPR research, from your perspective, proceeding in the kind of careful, stepwise manner that it should?
There are definitely people trying to leapfrog, and there's not much to stop them. In the U.S., we regulate genetic engineering and CRISPR-type technologies if they are funded with federal funds. And basically what we've said here in the U.S. is you can't use federal funds to do research on human embryos. That's part of the bigger abortion debate. People don't want anything done to embryos. It just gets caught up in our ongoing perennial eternal wars about the pros and cons of abortion. So the NIH just took it off the table. Well, that's fine, but that means you can do whatever you want with private money or foundation money, and that's what happened in Oregon. And there are others out there who are looking for those investors to say, hey, we'll do our research, we won't take federal funds, but then there are no rules. And the reason we're talking about rules is you don't want to see anybody try to make a human being with the crude knowledge of CRISPR that we have now. You may get a lot of experiments on embryos where you develop them in a dish, but how far you go is not settled. Could you keep the embryo in a dish for a week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks? What's ethical? Even basic questions like competency. Does the team know what it's doing? Has it done adequate animal work before it starts trying these things on human embryos? No rules about that.
There has, though, been a lot of debate within the science community as well about how we should or shouldn't proceed, whether there should be a moratorium placed on, you know, human editing.
Mm-hmm.
Did we get any closer this year to having more of those rules and more of those ethical guidelines that you clearly and many scientists and much of the public feel we need to have?
Teeny bit. A lot of discussion in the journals about the need for more oversight, more accountability to independent committees. So we had at least dialogue about that. We didn't get any rules put in place. I'm a big fan of having the scientific community try to regulate itself. I think we could get consensus among scientists that say, here's how far you should go, here's the steps you should take to get approval, here's an independent body that we've created. One other way to control what's going on, if journal editors said, look, here's the things you have to do if you're doing research on human embryos before we would publish your paper, that would go a long way toward regulating the field.
I'm talking with bioethicist Art Kaplan of New York University. Let's shift our attention to concussions and CTE, a phrase that I think a year ago nobody would have known, and it's almost becoming a household phrase. It stands for chronic traumatic encephalopathy, and it's the kind of long-term impairments, mental and cognitive impairments and brain damage that we now know are linked to concussions. How much did we get done this year in terms of really solidifying that connection and understanding what leads to CTE?
We got somewhat. We had more autopsies. We had the first reports of being able to diagnose trouble in the brain from trauma by using CAT scans and NMR scans. First report came out saying we don't have to wait until you're dead, and the technology moved ahead this year. So that's positive, because then people can know if they're starting to get trouble. Somebody who thinks they might have a difficulty, their behavior changes suddenly, maybe it is due to CTE. We also started to understand that there's all kinds of ways to get brain damage. So there's people who might be near an explosion, and they suffer from a massive head injury and big damage to the brain. But the CTE you're talking about might take place because of a regular series of blows to the head, say football practice, where there's no massive hit, there's no gigantic traumatic event. But if you get hit in the head 50 times a day at practice, 5 days a week for 3 months, that can cause steady damage as well, and we're starting to understand that. So good news is, a little better on the diagnosis, a little better in understanding subtypes of brain damage. Sad news, still no cures, still no consensus around how best to treat these kinds of brain injuries.
And of course, a lot of the debate has focused on how to prevent these injuries, and specifically, as you mentioned, football.
Right.
We definitely saw a study this year, the largest collection of brains from football players of all ages, showing that CTE is prevalent in players at a range of levels. And in fact, one of those researchers from Boston University said to us here on this show that there is likely no safe level of play when it comes to football. I mean, that really has ignited a debate. NFL has been in the spotlight and in debate for any number of reasons this year, but really kind of, you know, put NFL and football under some pressure this year.
Yeah, I think the NFL is still a little bit in denial. There are ads running where moms come out and say they're okay with their kids playing football. They've had this safe tackling idea around for a while, which I think is just nonsense. But again, we tend to focus on the big hits and the big games, and certainly they can be damaging. We had a terrible spinal cord injury of a Pittsburgh professional football player just recently. But it's that steady drumbeat of damage from the little hits and the small hits and the continuous hits, and I don't see how you could ever get that out of the game. One thing that that does suggest, though, is, and maybe we'll see this moving forward, we started to see it a little bit, no tackle football, no contact football, really until high school. I think if you start playing as a little kid, it's just more and more exposure, more and more hits to the head. So maybe we'll see a movement toward, you can't do that until high school, maybe even until college. And the other thing I think we may see is parents starting to say, you know what, I'm not going to let my kid play football. And that really is a threat to the NFL because that's where your fan base comes from.
I wonder if you could just leave us with a few thoughts about the role of science in these kind of debates. I mean, this isn't just a science issue. Even the gene editing is not just a technology issue. These are social issues. Where does science and the science community fit into that?
Well, the science community has an obligation to make clear what it wants to do and what it won't do. So in CRISPR and genetic engineering, I think the main drive is to come up with cures for diseases that are genetic. Think of sickle cell, think of Tay-Sachs disease, think of cystic fibrosis or hemophilia. I think there's something commendable about trying to find cures using genetic engineering that can fix those. At the same time, people worry, are the scientists going to try and make super people? Are they out to make kind of enhanced human beings? And I think science should stand up and say, no, we're not going to do that. That's an area that, for now, is completely off limits because we don't understand what we're doing in any way. Not worthwhile. So the science community has got to engage the public and make its case.
Art Kaplan is the Dr. William F. and Virginia Connolly Mitty Professor of Bioethics at New York University's Langone Medical Center. Art, thank you so much and Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you too.
And that's our show. Happy New Year, everybody. I'm Heather Goldstone. Thanks for listening.
Living Lab Radio is produced by WCAI in Woods Hole and WGBH Radio in Boston. It's produced by me, Elsa Partan, and Heather Goldstone is executive producer. Funding for Living Lab Radio comes from the Candida Fund, investing in transformative leaders and ideas. Theme music by Stellwagen Symphonette.